Funding for WPLN News comes from you, our listeners, and Bernstein Private Wealth, working with creators and innovators to invest with intention and build the legacy they want to leave behind. More at Bernstein.com.
I'm Khalil A. Colonna, and this is Nashville. Thank you for joining us today. In a few moments, we'll open up the phone line so you can talk with Mayor Freddie O'Connell for our monthly segment, Ask the Mayor. If you have questions about the mayor's transit referendum, if you're curious about what's going on with Metro Arts, or if you have a complaint about an unjustified parking ticket, you're not the only one. Just pick up the phone and dial 615-760-2000. That's 615-760-2000 to talk with Mayor O'Connell. All right, so as the phone lines fill up, I want to remind you that Mayor O'Connell is a human being, so let's treat him with respect. Okay, so now that we have that clear, I'd like to welcome Mayor Freddie O'Connell back to Nashville. Mr. Mayor.
Khalil, good to be with you. As ever, the seat is a little warm. You guys have those seat warmers, and I didn't request that mine be on, but it's on anyway. No,
we like to treat our guests well and make sure that you're comfortable. How have things been?
There is never a dull moment. Sometimes you get really exciting opportunities. We have kind of re-engaged with Bloomberg as an organization and got this really incredible opportunity to work with them on the intersection of climate and community through joining their Bloomberg American Sustainable Cities program. But you know, too, yesterday was the anniversary of the tragic shooting at the Covenant School.
Yes.
A painful memorial moment for the city. Just before that, we had the tragic first disappearance and then death of Riley Strain. A small plane crash, which is an unusual event for the city. So there have been some very challenging moments that sometimes have tragic components of them. And then, we do these big signature initiatives of the things we knew we wanted to set out to do, a strong development deal on the East Bank, transportation improvement program, our first capital spending plan. But we did all of those things also knowing that the first operating budget that we're going to work on is going to happen against some constraints from recent fiscal policy that mean it's going to feel less big than those other things we're working on.
Okay. I do want to ask you about yesterday, marking a year since the tragic events at the Covenant School. Just give us your reflections, not only as mayor, but as a human being, on what's happened in the past year for our city.
It's hard because we as a city have had difficulty, I think, catching our breath and having any kind of break from some of the trauma that ends up being deadly. I guess the refreshing part in the past year is even yesterday, you still saw enough intensity and interest in the effort to keep ourselves safe that you did see Voices for a Safer Tennessee recreate this human chain that linked literal people with their arms together from Vanderbilt Centennial Park era all the way down to Legislative Plaza. So I got to participate in that, and that was pretty refreshing to see that much intensity of energy still to think about broadly what are we doing to be a safer community. But we still have, even after March 2020 with deadly tornadoes, it tends to be decades before you go through that. And already as of December, we had another deadly tornado in a really challenging context of some concentrated poverty, some language access. So it's hard to kind of feel like we're back on our feet and in this space of, hey, we can feel good about the world again. And I think that's one of those tensions that has existed over the past year.
This is Ask the Mayor with Mayor Freddie O'Connell. To ask your question or comment for the mayor, just call 615-760-2000. Now, before we get to the phones, I do want to ask you about something. I was out of town for the past few days. When I came back, I saw an article by WSMV4 with the headline, Nashville Mayor Among Those Who Received Bogus Parking Tickets. Now, apparently, license plate readers are used in city garages. They're mis reading the license plates leading to unjustified parking tickets. You were a victim of this. What's going on?
So in the case that this is maybe one of those alarming scenarios about things happening first without your knowledge and also without your permission. Mm. I noticed that I had gotten some kind of notification about a parking violation. I went and looked at it, and in discovering it, I discovered that money had been taken out of my account already to pay for a ticket from a garage that I had not parked in. And upon digging into it, a false license plate reader hit from that garage apparently had misidentified the state.
Wow.
And so I guess somebody had parked in that garage with an out-of-state plate that's number matched mine. But I got not only cited, but had money taken out of my account. So interestingly enough, I had some outreach from the state attorney general's office as, you know, in kind of talking through that with WSMV recently.
Now, is this the same company that's in charge of license plate readers for Metro Police?
No. So that's two different systems. This is my incident happened with Metropolis Parking, which has increased their footprint in Nashville since my event. I mean, the overall technology of how license plate readers are read is the same, but it's a totally different context there.
All right. Now, people of Nashville know that even the mayor can get parking tickets. Okay, so we're going to open up the phones. We're going to go to Libby in Nashville. Libby, thank you so much for calling. What's your comment for the mayor?
Yes, I received a postcard yesterday from the Nashville city government saying that they were considering putting speed bumps on Leak Avenue, and I live on Leak Avenue. It's really not that big of a problem for speeders. What we really need is more sidewalks, but it's really overkill because from Harding Road to Palmer Park, they're talking about putting like 5 or 6 speed bumps. I go up and down that road many times a day, and I just am adamantly opposed to that. The only time we ever had a lot of speeding on that road was when they had closed Harding Place and people were diverted to Leak Avenue, but it's not necessary to put, and it's an expense that we don't need to incur for the city. And
well,
I guess that's about it.
Yeah,
thanks so much for
sharing that. I think this is a great example of those conversations that do play out on a street by street, block by block basis. And I will say a couple things there. One, traffic calming has become one of the most popular requests in Metro overall. Now, one of the reasons I think NDOT, our Nashville Department of Transportation, still gives notices like that is because they know they don't want to. I think they get requests in, and maybe it's one neighbor who requests it on behalf of a community. Well, they do need to understand, okay, kind of to her point, what is the actual context on the ground? Is this broadly supported by all residents of a street? Was this just one person who happened to see a car moving too fast? But you also heard the other concern there, which is a top concern of mine. One of the reasons that there might be interest from one of her neighbors is that that's a community that does not have enough sidewalk connectivity. Mm. In the capital spending plan I just referenced, one of the pieces of good news was between what we put in the capital spending plan, what we had from surplus fund balance last year, we have another $17.5 million going into sidewalks. We have another $27 million going into Vision Zero, the biggest investment we've made yet as a city in kind of those intersection safety scenarios for the most dangerous intersections. But it plays right into why the Transportation Improvement Program we're suggesting for voters to consider this November is also so important, is that is going to be the fastest way for us as a city right now to accelerate sidewalk delivery. I don't know enough of the details there, but I would recommend, I think it was Betty who called, is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so if I would say fill out the survey there and express that you don't think it's necessary, and that's how we do it.
All right, that was Libby.
Libby, okay, there you go.
You heard from the mayor. All right, thank you so much for that call, Libby. We're going to go to Deb. It's another transportation-related question. Deb, you are on with the mayor. Thanks so much for calling.
Yes, a medical transportation point I'd like to bring out, the on and off ramps on 440, at least on the south side, and trying to get onto I-65 South, are always jam-packed.
Deb, it's a little bit hard to understand you. We're waiting for the line to get clear. Can you start over for us?
Oh, yeah. You want me to start?
Oh, that's much clearer. You're clear now.
Oh, good. This is a transportation thing to point out. The off and on ramps from 440 onto 440 on the south side, at least, are always jam-packed. Trying to get down to 65 from 440, trying to get on Hillsborough Road from 440. Just wondered if there were any plans to expand those lanes.
That's a really important question for how we move around the city, and I think it also gets into why infrastructure transportation can be so complicated. Our interstates are actually managed and governed by TDOT, the State Department of Transportation. Now, they just did this big statewide Transportation Modernization Act. They've got this 10-year Build With Us program. I know they've got a lot of things that they're considering, including what they call choice lanes that may involve some reconsideration. I do think I-65 may be in their recommended pilot scenario. That probably will result in some reconfiguration. But I do know, Deb, exactly what you're talking about, because that used to be a key part of my commute. And so I know that our local Department of Transportation works very closely with TDOT. Sometimes there is just a little bit of a misalignment of priorities there. I mean, we're still working with TDOT on some of the pothole scenarios that affect Briley Parkway, Ellington Parkway, the interstates, including some of our on and off ramps. But it's a process of coordination, and we will note your concern for TDOT.
All right. If you're just tuning in, this is Nashville, and I'm your host, Khalil Ekolona. We're talking with Mr. Mayor Freddie O'Connell for Ask the Mayor. If you have questions for the mayor, call 615-760-2000. That's 615-760-2000. And keep the phones ringing. We are getting to them, and the phone lines are up. We've got Nicole in the Nations. Nicole, thanks for being on with us. What's your comment or question for the mayor?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great. So, first of all, I wanted to thank the mayor for his administration's efforts to get funding out to artists, particularly, you know, getting funding out based on the formula from July that gave more funding than ever before to independent artists and small organizations. But I wanted to ask about the finance director, Kevin Crumbo's memo to the Metro Council that he sent last week. As y'all may know, the Metro Arts Commission is meeting as we speak, and several members of the commission have expressed their concerns with the tone of the memo. And I'm wondering if the mayor is in support of all of the requests in the letter, particularly the request to make no further commitments to artists or arts organizations until the foregoing actions are implemented, and there is full agreement with the administration on the selection and implementation of future grants and awards. That seems to me like an overstep of the administration's role in arts funding.
Well, I think there is a lot of complexity with Metro Arts right now, including the fact that over the past year, we have now had more than half a dozen resignations from the commission. In fact, we are down to only four eligible commissioners who could even serve as chair of the commission. We also have a director of the staff that has been out on medical leave with no acting director and down to a small number of employees who remain in an organization that across consultants and turnover doesn't have a lot of capacity to administer this stuff. I think this has brought a lot of concerns raised from our Metro Human Resources Department, our finance department, and our legal department, as well as the mayor's office. We're trying to actively recruit from the community in a bunch of different places, qualified commissioners for Metro Arts, and make sure that we can even process things. Right now, it would be very difficult with no one in a position on a day-to-day basis to process grants, to even know how to administer the grants process. We are still working with the staff who are there on a day-to-day basis. It has been our top priority from the get-go to ensure, particularly for money that was available in FY24, that We got artists and arts organizations paid. That process is being organized right now. It's something we are still focused on, and we want to make sure that as we go forward and grow the pie, that we also are cognizant of the fact that smaller arts organizations do need increased access to this funding.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Nicole. All right. We're going to go to Stephanie in Nashville. She's got a question about schools. Stephanie, thanks for being here. What's your question for the mayor?
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. My question about school start times is that we know there's so many benefits to starting school 8:30 and later. But I'm hearing from parents that there might be some of the common objections are around bus transportation, older siblings taking care of younger siblings after school, and school sports, after school activities. And beyond, like, I know that there's some parent support, but then there's some parent objections to a later start time in Nashville. And I'm just wondering, what have other school districts done around the country that are larger than Nashville and have implemented a later start time successfully? And even like the entire state of California, their high school start at 8:30, middle school starts at 8. Like, what kind of creative solutions are available to metro schools so that we can meet these objections and also just move the start times to a time that is better for kids?
Yeah, this is something I talked about a lot because I have heard for years now from parents whose students start to enroll in metro schools, traditional public high schools, that they see firsthand the effects of how problematic it is for us to have the earliest high school start times in the country. I know that some of our school board members, some of our former school board members have looked pretty closely at the data and looked pretty closely at what some other school districts and other jurisdictions have done. I think this is really a question of, you know, making sure that there is a broadly aligned goal here of recognizing that later high school start times is an evidence-based policy approach that is good for not just student performance, but also student health and ultimately working family outcomes. Now, in recognizing that, we do have to also acknowledge that, yes, this would probably mean changes to yellow bus service for metro schools. It would mean recognizing the complexity of extracurricular activities, including athletics, and family access to those activities, and then also the number of students who are involved in either family business or other employment after school, and making sure we take all that into effect. But my sense of this is a thing that we can address all of those challenges and move to a place where we are being evidence-based in how we think about school start times. And just because something is the way we've always done it doesn't mean we can't do better.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. I know this about later start times. A lot of sleepy teenagers will be happy.
I think a lot of sleepy parents will be happy.
Yes, indeed. This is Nashville. I'm Khalil Akeloner. We're Ask the Mayor with Mayor Freddie O'Connell. Call 615-760-2000 to ask your question to the mayor. We've got Barry in Bell's Bend. Barry, thank you so much for holding. What's your comment or question for the mayor?
About five dumps out here that are receiving waste from construction sites all over the county and also from out of county. Two of them are now involved in federal lawsuits we have filed over both the lack of a landfill permit and mud, stormwater. The city has so far taken a position that they are just mass grading areas and don't need to be regulated as landfills. Can you help us with that?
I'm going to have to go back and look at this. I know we had a lot of discussion when I was still on the Metro Council about this exact scenario where somebody would go get a grading permit, but then would not actually develop the land and then use that grading permit effectively to put fill in there that clearly was coming from offsite. And so it is something that I'm going to have to go back and look at the sites you're talking about. If you don't mind, could I ask to send details of some of the locations in question over to mayor@nashville.gov? And I do want to take a look at this. When I was on the council still, we had a District 1 council member who I encouraged us to look at the Jackson Law, which is a state law related to solid waste. We also did create a multi-year zero waste plan. And I know Councilmember Berkeley Allen, who still serves the city at large, has been looking very intensely at how we divert some of that construction and demolition waste away from landfills and either increase the amount of it that gets recycled and otherwise doesn't wind up in communities that we know have already had too much both truck activity and potentially environmentally sensitive activity in their area. So I do want to take a look at that. So thanks for flagging that.
Barry, thank you so much for your call. Okay, we're going to Amy in Nashville. She's got a question about transport. Amy, thanks for being with us. What's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was recently up in the D.C. and New York area, and their public transportation, it shares stations and, I believe, tracks with Amtrak. So with all the discussion about the roadways being congested and our need for more infrastructure, have we looked into partnering with a company like Amtrak? It seems mutually beneficial. It would extend where they could take out-of-state passengers to, and it would help us with commutes.
Yeah,
and share the cost.
It's a great point, and I will say we can't include that because Amtrak is part of our national passenger rail service. It's not something that's eligible under the Transportation Improvement Program we're working on the ballot. But the good news here is that we have had several state legislators as well as other mayors in Tennessee and surrounding states very interested in this and restoring passenger rail service in parts of Tennessee, including a link from Nashville through Chattanooga to Atlanta. I have actually had the opportunity in the past several months to meet with the CEO of Amtrak, Mayor Kelly in Chattanooga, some of our legislators who are interested in this. I am more optimistic than I've been in a long time that we may actually see some relief there in restoring real passenger rail service to Nashville. And I expect to be deeply engaged in that as we make progress.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Amy. And don't forget, y'all, if you're calling the number 615-760-2000, keep the phone ringing. We've got folks working hard to take your calls. We will get to your call. So just let the phone ring. Someone will get to you shortly. All right. We've got Saeed in Nashville. Saeed, what is your comment? Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. My question was about education and how we're supporting teachers. Like, it feels like in our state, teachers are getting fired or even talking about diversity and history accurately. Like, history books are being banned or rewritten. I don't know what we can do. Like, is there anything Nashville can do to help combat this? Or are we at the mercy of the state?
Yeah, most of the policy discussions that you're talking about, unfortunately, have to do with state intervention here in education policy. But I will say we've got incredibly courageous school librarians throughout Metro schools. We've got great teachers, and we certainly have great community leaders in a city with a rich civil rights history and multiple historically Black colleges and universities that I think are adamant that we tell history in its most accurate form. And so I am paying a lot of attention to this conversation, but right now, as we stay in touch with our friends and partners at Metro Schools, I'm not hearing yet any reports of concerns from history curricula that people are actually feeling like they're in serious jeopardy yet. But I know that a lot of people are paying close attention to this. And I'll say, for my part, I want not only Nashville's local civil rights history to be told accurately, but also to ensure that students who are growing up here, who are also Tennesseans, understand the complexity of history, because it is not close to one-sided, shouldn't be, and should be the kind of thing that actually fosters good discussion so we build better futures.
All right, Saeed, thank you so much for that call. We've got Earl in South Nashville staying on the topic of education. Earl, thanks for calling. What's your comment?
Oh, yes. Thanks for taking my call. Congratulations, Mayor. I just wanted to ask a question. If you've been following what they're doing in Rutherford County with chess and teaching critical thinking to students, and if Metro has any plans to follow along those paths.
It's a great question. No, I had not followed Rutherford County's work on chess in particular. I will say for my part, I was very encouraged a few years ago to participate in a session with an organization called CS for All that tries to bring computer science curricula into work with young people. I will say, too, as somebody who grew up in K through six education in Metro schools, I had access both to an amazing early programming curriculum through Encore, which is now Gate at Metro schools, and then also had a great chess club at my school. And I've been lucky that both of my daughters have been able to participate in that. I need to go look at that Rutherford County program. So thank you for sharing it for me. But I do think those opportunities for critical thinking, we're so lucky to have organizations like NASA, which is the Nashville After Zone Alliance, focused primarily on middle school activities. But thinking of these things as co-curricular and making sure that young people get advantages to have, get the opportunity to have those, scenarios outside of the classroom maybe, but that still are absolutely important for how we do critical thinking. But I'm really glad you shared that with me.
All right. Thank you so much, Earl. Mr. Mayor, when's the last time you played chess?
I did play with my daughter maybe last year, but it's been a few months since I've had a good game.
Well, how about we have a beer and play a game?
Look, I at this point, there was a time when, you know, I tracked my score and all that kind of stuff. Oh, I used to be a little more serious and in college. Did you ever hear of Bug House? Do you know that?
No.
It's the multi-board chess configuration where you basically play as a team.
Okay.
And you have two boards going and pieces exchange from one another. So we had what we called a mutant chess club that did variations on chess. But yeah, happy to go do chess.
That sounds pretty intense. I'm no Bobby Fischer, but let's get it in. All right. We've got Fayette from Nashville with a call about the stadium in East Bank. Fayette, thanks for holding. What's your comment?
Well, good morning. It's a real simple comment is, with the East Bank and their new construction, I'm a master gardener, and I loved helping people put in native plants to Middle Tennessee. And that's my question is, whomever is going to need to get the contract to do the landscaping around the new stadium on the East Bank, has it been considered to only put in just native plants to this part of Tennessee? And a follow-up question would be, have you even contacted any of the master gardeners to possibly help? Because we are all volunteers.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought this up. Just in the wake of Metro's Arbor Day celebration and recognition of 29 years of being a Tree City USA, I know a lot of our recent tree policies and overall greenscaping policies have really focused on the need to stick with native species. But I'm going to take this right back to Chief Development Officer Bob Mendez and ensure that's under consideration. I hope you have seen, too, that the overall plans for the East Bank development do have a lot of parks and green space there, including the addition of several miles of greenway. So we want to get it right in terms of highlighting native species and making sure. I know multiple of our master gardener communities have been recognized through their work in supporting our overall Arbor Day initiatives and Root Nashville. So I'll also check on that contact. But I've been very pleased over the years that I've been involved, including on Metro Council, that we've made huge strides in some tree policy, that we've also started to engage at the community level. We've gotten more money in the hands of our beautification commission. And I know that my own former beautification commissioner was working on an urban forestry initiative that would focus exclusively on native trees. Our friends in the Germantown neighborhood just recently achieved an urban arboretum status for their use of native trees in recent planting. So there's a lot of good news here, but I will take that specific question back to Bob Mendez.
All right, Nate, thank you so much. I'm sorry, Fayette, thank you so much for that call. We're going to go to Nate in Nashville. Nate, you got a question about roundabouts. What's your comment for the mayor?
Yeah, Hey, Mr. Mayor. My name's Nate. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up in Carmel, Indiana, the unofficial capital of roundabouts in the country. I wonder, roundabouts have been proven to be safer and more sustainable for our roadways and for our communities. And I wanted to see if you would ever consider adding roundabouts to replace some of our intersections within the city. Thank you.
Yeah, so this is another place of some optimism and some good news, too. We just finished up a beautiful new roundabout in Southeast Nashville. I believe it is in Councilmember Rutherford's district, Council District 31. And then I have spoken to several council members about some other opportunities we have at intersections where we know they will both improve safety and, I think, help with congestion. There was one that we were considering over near TSU's campus, and one of the challenges for some of our roundabout designs when we are keeping safety at the forefront of how they work is because they sometimes do have an impact on how much public right-of-way is available, you have to go do some acquisition of easements to get there. And there was concern about some impacted property owners over near TSU. We're looking at a similar situation down in South Nashville and Council District 4. So it is very much on our Nashville Department of Transportation's roadmap for improvements for infrastructure. Some scenarios are much easier to implement than others, but I know it's something we just had a great successful implementation of, and I expect we'll see more going forward. So thanks for the question.
All right, Nate. I'm sorry, Sebastian. Thank you so much for that call. We're going to go to Sebastian. We got a comment about speed bumps. Let's go. Sebastian, what's your comment?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay, great. Mayor McConnell, Khalil, thanks for having me. My concern is regarding the speed racing, and my complaints are I'm a homeowner in Donaldson, and there's a very there's a big issue in my particular neighborhood. I've made multiple complaints with MNPD regarding the situation, and nothing has been done about it. And it goes back to a previous caller's issue with the speed bumps and tracking down, you know, the speed racing and what it's done to me, mental health concerns on this issue. I am losing sleep over these issues and no one's doing anything. My concern is I contact MNPD and nothing seems to be happening. And so I just, who is the right channel to have said concerns?
Yeah, Sebastian, thanks for sharing this. I think what I want to do, so a couple things here on speed racing. I know it has been an increasing challenge in both Southeast and farther East Nashville, like Donaldson. I will say, over the past couple of years, our Metro Nashville Police Department has put some more energy into this. Sometimes they don't get individual racers, but in these group scenarios where there may be something like an intersection shutdown or other things, they're working very intensely to try to disrupt these kinds of larger events. Meanwhile, our Nashville Department of Transportation is looking at corridors where speed racing is likely, or not just neighborhood streets, but on these bigger areas like Donaldson Pike that have longer straightaways and, you know, people running red lights. And this is why we have funded some of the Vision Zero initiatives, is because we know when we make these corridors safer for pedestrians, they also actually wind up not facilitating street racing as much. But Metro Nashville Police Department is the right starting point. If you know that people are illegally speeding, I'm going to follow up with some of this context again when I get back and see if I can identify I don't know what, as I'm sitting here today, which of the divisions with MNPD is kind of got a leader appointed for this initiative, but I'll go work on that. And again, same as earlier in the conversation today, if you'll send a note over to mayor@nashville.gov with location details, we can follow up with you and try to provide some more follow-up. So far, with both auto theft and this speed racing and drag racing situation, I know the police department has increased their efforts to try to crack down here and give Nashvillians some peace of mind and also safer streets. So we've seen some progress there, but I'm sorry that it hasn't reached you and Donaldson yet.
All right, Sebastian, thank you so much for calling, and thanks everyone else who has called in for this edition of Ask the Mayor. There's a couple phone calls we can't get to because the mayor has other business to attend to. Just go to mayor@nashville.gov to give him more. Again, thank you, Mayor O'Connell, for coming in and talking with us. I feel confident in speaking for the people of Nashville to say we greatly appreciate you taking time to talk with us.
I'm glad to have the opportunity, Khalil. Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, sir.
We'll be back next time.
That's right. All right, we got a short break. When we come back, we'll head to the main library downtown to visit a newish installation that celebrates the 19th Amendment and the women's suffrage movement. You can join the conversation by tweeting us at This Is Nashville. We'll be right back.
Raise your champagne glass.
I'm Khalil A. Colonna, and this is Nashville. Earlier this month, I took a trip to the Nashville Public Library downtown to check out their exhibit called Women's Votes, which opened in 2020 and celebrates the centennial of the 19th Amendment. Rebecca Price, NPL program specialist, gave me a tour. Let's listen.
Let's go, girls. Come on.
Right now, we're standing in the newest space here in the Special Collections Division, which is this wing here of the Nashville Public Library Main Branch. It's the Votes for Women's exhibit. And this opened in 2020, which was the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, the Women's Suffrage Amendment, as it's famously known. It's part women's rights movement, you know, it's part voting rights movement, but it really is a story about American democracy and how we can affect it and how we can change it. We know that this was not a victory for all women in America by a long shot. This is just a milestone in the voting rights movement.
Man, I feel like a woman.
Tennessee played an important part of that story, of ratifying that federal amendment. 36 states were needed at the time, and we were the last one. We are at the height of Jim Crow. We are still also segregated along gender as well. There's still not a lot of spaces open to women as well. So for it to come down to a southern state was a very, very big deal. It's very controversial, and it came down, some say, to the wire.
Well, tell me that story,
okay,
if you know it.
Yeah, so that's the story of Harry Burns. I call him the darling of women's suffrage. But he was actually the youngest legislature at the time in the Tennessee General Assembly, two blocks up the street from where we stand. And they had to call a general session to vote on the amendment. It couldn't be part of the normal roster. And they spend about 2-3 weeks down here politicking, lobbying. Everyone came down here to Nashville. And as they're kind of whipping the votes and counting the votes, it's really unsure how Tennessee's going to vote. Almost all of the southern states had already rejected it. So as they're tallying those votes, no one knew how he was going to vote. And so it's called to the floor. And then he switches at the last minute when it gets down to him. And the famous story is he received a letter from his mother. But what I love about that story is the letter itself, which is in the archives in Knoxville, the Knoxville Library, is a 7-page long letter. And the part about the 19th Amendment is just a very short paragraph at the very end. The rest of the letter is just about news from NIOTA and kind of what's going on.
Dear son, I wish you were home too. We have had nothing but rain since you left. Meetings still in progress. Otha and I haven't been a single time. Uncle Bill and Mr. Bushnell came by this evening. Stayed about an hour. They were in the Ford. We haven't had the car out since you left, and if this rainy weather doesn't stop, I feel we will have to stay home the rest of the summer. The Rockwood crowd is going to White Cliff for Labor Day. Will you be home by then? Hurrah! And vote for suffrage, and don't leave them in doubt. I heard Candler's speech. It was very bitter. I've been watching to see where you stood, but I haven't seen anything yet. Write Mother every chance you get, for I am always looking for a letter when you are away. And don't forget to be a good boy and help Miss Thomas Cat with her rats. Is she the one that put rat in ratification? Ha! No more from Mama this time. With lots of love, Mama.
He's also getting lots of messages and telegrams from all over the country. So it's not just a letter from his mother, but it is. It was a very kind of gut-wrenching moment.
What about this room kind of signals to that future, recognizing the past and the history, but not just dwelling there and acting as if, hey, we've made it. Obviously, we haven't. There's a lot more places we can go to have that most perfect union as it was written in the documents. How does this room help us get there?
Well, we're standing in one of those very big sections right now. This is the anatomy of a movement. And this, what we're looking at right now for the listeners is an interactive touchscreen. And so we tell the story of suffrage through this kind of this moving circular constellation of tactics and strategies. So not necessarily just people, but what they were doing and how they were doing it. And then how maybe they're connected to all the other people in a movement. And you can get a great sense of that if you want to explore the grassroots mobilization, which is how this movement started and how all movements start. And since we opened, we've had 170 scheduled groups come through.
Wow.
And this is one that came through, and these were rising MNPS juniors and seniors.
Any conversations that are memorable to you?
The ones that we enjoy the most are the ones with the kids, with the school groups. They care so much about their community. They care so much about their families and their friends. And they have such big ideas, and they have such hope and compassion for their communities. And so those are always our favorites to come in. In fact, earlier this morning, there was a group of second graders that come through, and it's just so heartwarming to hear them. And they fill you with such hope because you're watching the future leaders right there.
Oh, yeah.
So you can see all kinds of great things here. Somebody here is concerned about men's mental health. Hmm. And they think they would be a great spokesperson.
Okay.
There's someone here who wants to be part of the women's movement, and she would make some posters. I love this one. They want to get involved in the women's rights and the Black Lives movements, and she could help support groups by being a meeting host. She could actually provide a space for people to come and meet and organize. But everybody has something that they're good at, and then they understand how that is a part of the movement.
First they said we couldn't dance, then said we couldn't drink. And unless a man allowed it, they said we couldn't think. They said we shouldn't speak till we were spoken to. Well, there was just so much back then we weren't allowed to do.
All right, so here we are at the voting machine, which I can say 100% is the favorite of everyone who comes through and does a program. You can see it's a pretty big voting machine. It's got two sides, 10 to each side. So we fit 20 people here at this machine, and you've got in front of you yes or no buttons. So imagine 20 people all at once, and they all start pressing. Just go. Khalil, go. Press the buttons.
I'm doing it. Pressing buttons.
Go, go, go. All right, so look around you, look behind you. Do you see what happened?
Oh, yes. You can see the results.
We asked people if they're comfortable to share just what they were thinking when they voted that way. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not about when you get into that booth, what button are you going to press? What we're concerned about is everything that led you up to that moment. Have you understood the impact of your vote? Can you understand the wording of the legislation? Is there a long history to this issue? What problem are you trying to solve? Will this create another problem? All of those things is what gets us up every day to inspire people to get to think of voting as an investment. Mm. This is an investment.
Investment in the democracy. How has been a part of curating this exhibit? Has it given you faith in fellow Americans and humans?
Oh, absolutely. Everyone leaves with, and this is always our goal, huh, I never thought about it like that. And what will they do with that as they become invested in their community and help create this caring community of Nashville that's invested in itself.
All right, we're taking one more short break. When we come back, we'll talk about what you can expect from the future of This Is Nashville. We'll be right back. I'm Khalil A. Colonna, and this is Nashville. All right, spring has sprung, and we're here to talk about what's new and coming up for This Is Nashville. Joining me now is our managing editor, Tasha A.F. Limley. Tasha, how's it going?
Hey there, Khalil. I am extra glad to be limping in here today after some time off, literally off my feet from an ankle break. But I took my first steps like a newborn today. And or a toddler. Yeah. I don't have kids. I guess they don't toddle till they're toddlers. But I am like a toddler. And but yeah, glad to be upright and in here with you.
It is so good to see you up and moving. Okay, so we got some big things coming up, right?
Yeah. Okay. So Khalil, while you were out a couple days this week, mm-hmm. LaTanya filled in for you. We loved having LaTanya Turner on the mic, and she kind of said you were up to something big. Like what's happening?
I am going to be taking a sabbatical for about 5 weeks. Hundreds and hundreds of episodes we've done so far in the past 2 years, and it's been a lot of work. Anyone who's come in, even the mayor mentions, wow, you guys have a lot going just to pull off one episode. And it's been a lot, so I'm going to take a little bit of a break.
Okay, so I get to go home now? Like, what's going on with the show? Are we going to still, we're gonna take the time off with you, follow along in your suitcase?
You know what? That would be great. I didn't buy enough tickets for everyone. What we have going on, we're going to have shows going on. The show's going to be on in full effect. We've been working hard. So for my sabbatical, you're going to hear different voices of different hosts filling in on This Is Nashville.
Okay, like who?
Longtime listeners will hear, they'll be happy to hear the voice of Emily Siner, former news director. Here she'll be in the host chair for a few shows. We've got podcast host and speaker Jerome Moore on an episode. Listeners may remember the diversely segregated segments he's done with us. We'll also have WPLN Morning Edition host Nina Cardona filling in. She'll be hosting next month's Ask the Mayor.
Okay.
And, you know, when I'm back, we got some big things happening this summer. I can't say what it is at this time, but keep your ears and eyes on Fridays. It's going to be a blast.
Because for the last few months, we've been running the middle on Fridays.
Yeah.
And so that might change.
That may change. Okay. And it's been really great. And many thanks to Jeremy Hobson and the crew at the middle. I was on an episode back in December. Many, many, many props and thanks to them for coming in and helping fill us out. But, you know, I'm just really excited about everything. Really excited about taking this time off and exploring a little bit of the world.
And one of the weeks that you're out, we may also have the opportunity to run a long series from NPR, I think I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. I don't know exactly what the series is yet. I'm going to be excited. And wherever I am in the world, I will be listening in.
Oh, yeah, I bet. You'll just have massive catch up when you return.
Yes, a ton of catch up. You know, it's been an absolute joy to sit here in this chair and to talk with people. I get to talk to the mayor once a month.
Yeah.
I get to talk to people of Nashville and Middle Tennessee about the things that not only they're concerned about, but the things they care about, the things that bring them light and happiness, and heavy things too. I'm really sad that I missed a few of the episodes that I wasn't able to sit in the chair and talk about Covenant and what happened, you know, in the year since that tragic event, or talk about the wonderful housing series that you're doing with Judith Tackett. But You know, it's I'm going to miss everything, but not too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm surprisingly feeling a little choked up seeing you today. And you're going to be missed in many fast returns.
Oh, yes, yeah. Definitely. I'll miss you all, too.
Traveling mercies, Khalil.
Yes. Thank you so much. We're going to go out with one of my favorite songs, Nonstop to Brazil by Astrud Gilberto. Thanks to you for tuning in this hour. This is Nashville is a production of Nashville Public Radio. Today's episode was produced by Elizabeth Burton with a little help from Mary Mancini. It was directed by Tasha A.F. Lemley. Our technical director and board operator is Liv Lombardi. The masterminds behind our theme music are LaRange and Namir Blade. Special thanks. Thanks to women everywhere. You can listen back at thisisnashville.org or wherever you get good podcasts. And the conversation doesn't end here. Tweet us at This Is Nashville. Find us on Instagram and tell us what you want from our show by filling in our quick survey online. This is Nashville. I'm Khalil Ekolona. I'll see you in May, everybody. But the show will see you on Monday. Be good to each other, Nashville.